Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
NAS does a hay stocks estimate December 1st and May 1st each year. The May 1st hay stocks are sitting at 21 million tons. That is 46.6% above last year. That is the largest year-over-year increase going back to 1990.
Nick Streff is the acting chief of the National Ag Statistics Service's crops branch, looking at hay stocks, and for the U.S., 21 million tons, compared to 14 million tons a year ago.
If we look at how it's divided up by state, there is a lot of blue on this map and a lot of large increases. We're looking at record highs in Montana, Oklahoma, and Utah. And then as you move east is when you start to see some states in the decline in terms of year-over-year hay stocks.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So as far as USDA's numbers here today, just for the wheat side of things, we will point out, like you mentioned, we've got a winter wheat production estimate out here this morning, as well as all wheat.
Rich Nelson, chief strategist with Allendale, looking at USDA's latest World Ag Supply Demand Estimates, or WASDE.
So this wheat balance sheet is live. It's a little different than corn or soybeans, where they're still using trend yields. Discussion for us on the wheat side for this year, though, is a lightly higher supply issue. This is true for soft red as well as our discussion for hard red. Total winter wheat production, 1.278 billion bushels. Keep in mind that's about 30 million over last year's crop as well. So lightly higher numbers there. Discussions as far as the wheat balance sheet from an ending stock number. You know, we're going to go in this case from this 688 million bushel number for last year. Now 766. But again, I'd actually like to focus to the world numbers. Of all things, USDA is now the smallest estimate of everybody for Russia. Now 88 million tons. Heck, last year was 91.5.
For the corn numbers, Nelson says,
keep in mind here, of course, we always start out each year at trend yield, and that's what you'd expect if you have normal weather, so at average temperatures and also average moisture. Now, given the summer weather forecast, we have to admit that there will be some problems reaching trend yield this year, but really that's not the main question. We've had this slightly threatening issue as far as summer weather in place for some time. The question is, will any moderate disruption, let's say 2%, 4%, or 6% off of that trend yield, will that be enough to change the large supply story? It probably won't, but it certainly can, maybe different than soybeans, give us a psychologically tighter viewpoint on a summer risk story than soybeans.
Of course, anytime we talk about soybeans, we have to focus on both the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere.
We're, of course, playing with two different crop years right now. We're still trying to figure out this crop, which is coming out here this spring, as well as we saw USDA's numbers out here today with some first estimates for that 25 harvest. Now, as far as the discussion with the spring discussion, well, we knew they wouldn't be really cutting crops too much for either Argentina or Brazil. They've been slow walking these numbers, and they've made it clear they will be different than the private trade as well as Brazil's own government. So for right now, we still have a significant discrepancy between USDA and everybody else for this discussion with Brazil, and a little discrepancy on the Argentine corn side. So this is an issue which still implies they're going to be heavy competitors. The main question, which we're still not answering just yet, is how significant of a competitor.
And for cotton,
this has been something which has, of course, been of a lot of interest. Now, as a precursor for a lot of our audience, remember last year's crop problems and certainly concerns here with yields a little bit there. So lower acres plus some light yield hits, that brought ending stocks down to 2.4 million bales, almost half the prior year's level. Now, for today's discussion, USDA did give us their first numbers for new crop wheat or new crop cotton, and no real major changes in acreage versus last year, but maybe some areas which have changed are this discussion with demand and whatnot. That helped them, in this case, give an ending stock number of 3.7 million bales. So last year, 2.4, this year, slightly more adequate, 3.7.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Record wheat production forecast.
Dr. Mark Jackanowski is chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board.
And as you kind of go down the list, especially toward the top of the list here, see some rebounding production, mainly based on expectations for trend yields so far this year. We're going to talk a little bit more about the European Union. There's a region where we're seeing a decrease in production, mainly driven by a lower area. Go into a little bit more detail about that. Russia as well, we're down a bit on a return to trend yields there. Ukraine down, that's an area reduction, new crop year. China and India both up strongly, so the two largest global wheat producers, both expected to have a record wheat harvest in the new crop year. I'll also talk a little bit about Northwest Africa. Another year of drought concerns there. So let's go into some detail in Europe. Real quick, just a map of the main wheat production areas in Europe, grown throughout across most of the region. Similar to rapeseed. So, you know, these two crops, we're going to talk about them simultaneously, both planted in the fall, similar, conditions throughout the year. So, wheat harvest about to begin soon. Rapeseed harvest comes a few weeks later. Essentially what we're looking at. So let's go all the way back to last fall in Europe and, key thing here is it was an extremely wet fall. So here you see percent of normal precipitation in October, more than double normal in some parts of the area, made planting difficult. And, so that's what's kind of, that's what's driving our, expectations for lower production this year. So it's wet in the fall, but it continued, precipitation continued, pretty good actually through the winter and into the spring. So didn't dry out too much, actually was favorable throughout most of the growing season. And it was also very warm, historically warm. This advanced the development of the crop. The crop is anywhere from a week to almost a month ahead of schedule. It's more advanced the further east you go there and the warmer it became. So much of this, a lot of this crop is ready to harvest, soon to be ready to harvest, way ahead of, well ahead of typical schedule. And conditions look good overall, given the good conditions in the spring, good moisture. If anything, we might be, France in particular, maybe edging on a little bit too wet. They could use some dryness over the next couple weeks to a month. But generally speaking, across most of the region, good moisture, good growing conditions. But the problem had been just that the crop couldn't get in because of that wet conditions in the fall. So EU wheat summary, basically production down a bit, but driven by lower area. Yields overall for the country as a whole up a bit, but slightly above trend, up from last year, production down because of the lower area.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Swanbuster came in with a 1985 farm bill that had all the conservation cross compliance provisions in it.
Roger McCowan is a tax law specialist with Washburn University.
And it came in as well with Sodbuster. Those were two of the major programs that were put in 85, as well as the Conservation Reserve Program. So a lot of conservation-type provisions that were included in the 1985 Farm Bill. And what it says basically is that you're not going to receive and be eligible for Federal Farm Program payments if you drain land that is deemed to be a wetland in accordance with the USDA rules to produce an agricultural crop on it. So that's the basics of what Swanbuster is and where it came from.
So an obvious question might be, what is a swamp?
Initially, there were some interim rules that were put out in June of 1986, and wetland under those rules was assumed to be truly wet ground that had never been farmed. And there had to be an obligation of funds, such as an assessment paid to a drainage district that would qualify it as a commenced conversion. And so, therefore, if it had already been commenced in terms of being converted from a wetland to cropland prior to the effective date of the 1985 Farm Bill, you could still farm that and participate in the federal farm programs. Final rules came out in 1987, and they were vastly different than the interim rules, and basically a lot more restrictive with respect to the application of the rules to farmers. You couldn't keep certain land in production that you could have under the interim rules, the way the final rules were written. And there were a lot of different aspects to that, but basically the rules became much tighter under the final rules.
And another big question is whether or not Swamp Buster is even constitutional.
This one was filed in Iowa in mid-April, and this is a frontal challenge, a frontal assault on the constitutionality of the Swamp Buster program as a whole. There are really five claims in the case, that it violates the Congress's power under the Commerce Clause, because the 9-acre wetland in that case is purely inside the state of Iowa and has no connection to interstate waters at all. And so there's no interstate commerce that's involved. Therefore, the Commerce Clause does not invoke congressional power, and the act is unconstitutional as a result of that. Also, they're claiming that the Swamp Buster rules impose unconstitutional conditions by conditioning a government benefit on the waiver of a constitutional right. They also say that it amounts to a taking of their private property in violation of the Constitution that the government has to pay for by granting the government a permanent conservation easement over their 9 acres without paying for it, and that the Swamp Buster regulations exceed the authority that NRCS has as a government agency by adding what's called woody vegetation to the statutory definition of converted wetlands. And then finally, they say that the regulations exceed the agency's statutory authority and by doing so violate that Grassley Amendment. So this is a second case that also involves a claim involving the Grassley Amendment. We may have a trial court decision by the end of 2024. But I would imagine whatever side loses will appeal it, and then it would go on to the Eighth Circuit, and we could be easily into 2025 or 2026. If it goes all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, we could easily be into 2027 by then. I have an article on this posted on my blog, which can be accessed through my homepage, which is washburnlaw.edu/WALTR. It can also be found on the Ag Manager website through the Department of Ag Econ at K-State.
Roger McCohen with Washburn University. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So our planted acres for winter wheat are at 34.1 million acres. That's unchanged from our March report.
Nick Streff is the acting chief of the National Ag Statistics Service's crops branch at USDA. On Friday, rolling out wheat numbers as part of the crop production report.
Harvested acres are at 25.2 million acres, which is up from last year by 515,000 acres. This is the first forecast for harvested acres, yield, and production. Yield is set at 50.7 bushels per acre, up 0.1 bushel from last year. And production is forecast at 1.28 billion bushels, which is up 2.4% from last year. If we look at those harvested and planted numbers over time, you can see that 34.1 million acres and how it compares to our current harvested estimate of 25.2. If you look at our harvest to planted ratio, currently it's sitting at 73.8%. That is the eighth lowest on record for wheat. So while it is above last year, it is still one of the lower ones on record. And to note, 2023, just last year, was the second lowest HTP on record, and 2022 is the fourth lowest on record. If we look at harvested acres by state, first, just a note on how to read this slide. The top number on each state represents the harvested acres. The second number represents the percent change from last year. The states shaded in blue have increased over the last year, and the states shaded in red have decreased. The darker the color, the larger their percentage change. And looking at these winter wheat harvested acres, we're looking at record lows in Michigan and Virginia. That's notated by the ampersand next to their numbers. And you can see on kind of more of the central and eastern part of the U.S., we have decreases. And then through the central and west, we have a mix of increases and decreases in terms of harvested acres. Looking at the national yield over time, going back to 1995 with our trend line yield, you can see how the 50.7 bushels per acres compares. And then if we look at winter wheat yield by state, it's a mix of increases and decreases across the country. We're looking at record highs in Pennsylvania and Tennessee, notated by the pound symbol. And just some of the bigger changes from year over year in terms of total bushels. Oklahoma's up 9 bushels from last year, Washington up 11, Oregon up 12. And one of the larger decreases on a bushels per acre basis would be Arkansas, down 7 from last year. And if we look at our production over time, here's how that 1.28 billion bushels compares going back to 2005. If realized, this would be the first time in recent history, at least on this table, that we would have consecutive year-over-year increases. Looking at winter wheat by class, here's our hard red winter wheat at 705 million bushels. That's up 17.4% from last year. Soft red at 344 million bushels is down 23.5% from last year. But if you look in the bottom right corner of the slide, that notes the most recent history for soft red winter. And it's comparing back to last year, which was the 16th highest production on record there. Moving on to white wheat at 229 million bushels is up 15.7% from last year. Looking at trade expectations, here's how the NAS estimate fares in relation to the industry expectations. So a quick note on this slide, each blue dot represents an individual industry analyst estimate, and the red dot represents the NAS forecast. You can see NAS is within the range of the trade guesses, with several trade guesses above the NAS range at this point in time.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Beef production for this month for the current year, 2024, up a bit, 140 million pounds there.
Dr. Mark Jekinowski, chairman of the World Ag Outlook Board, with the latest livestock numbers from the WASDE report.
That reflects entirely higher weights, higher cattle weights, and that also reflects the fact that marketings have been slower. So slower marketings, keeping cattle on feed longer, weights are increasing. So those will come on to market later as heavier cattle. Pork production, small change this month, down just a bit, 30 million pounds. A little bit of offset there. Higher slaughter volume, offset by lower weights. Broilers down a bit this month, mainly just truing up to slower first quarter slaughter data there. And turkey production adjusted lower this month as well. Lower prices. It's that industry has been under some pressure for some time. Moving into next year, beef production anticipated to be down year over year. Tighter cattle inventories, going to be tightening up those beef supplies. Pork production up 340 million pounds. Expecting continued strength in pigs per litter, offsetting some lower farrowings. Broiler production, steady growth, good strong demand, lower feed costs, tight meat supplies overall, continuing to favor higher production by the broiler sector. Turkey, a little bit of a rebound there, some flock recovery from after HPAI outbreaks, but still relatively weak demands, keeping a cap on those increases. Prices, steer prices lowered for 2024 this month, $1.50. Seeing some weakness in uncertainty in demand. We're entering grilling season. This should be season of fairly strong demand. Waiting to see how that pans out. But for now, you know, we're just seeing, you know, seeing recent data showing some reduction in steer prices. Hog prices as well down this this month. Strong dollar. Some of the same factors, grilling season uncertainty, but also strong dollar affecting some of the export demand there as well. Then moving into next year, 2025. Steer prices expected to rebound strongly there as well, reflecting those tighter supplies. No big surprise there. On the other hand, hog prices down a bit, reflecting higher supplies. So basic economics at work there. Broilers and turkey for the current crop, for current calendar year, both down this month a bit, just reflecting recent prices to date. For next year 2025, we're expecting a little bit of softening in broiler prices just because of the strong increase in production, and anticipating some demand recovery by in turkey, hoping to provide some price strength there.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
There's actually quite a few planters rolling, more than we anticipated.
Kara Bishop is with Lubbock-based Plains Cotton Growers.
Some are planting corn, obviously, when you drive by the side of the road and you see one. But there have been some cotton planting going on in late April. Last week, I was in Swisher County at Barry Evans' place, and they were planting, and there were two other planters in that region going at it as well. So Mark, our director of field services, has seen a lot more activity than we had anticipated this early in the year. But since it's been warmer, soil temps must be high enough to withstand the risk on that. So we've got quite a few people sitting on go, got planters out, just getting ready to get going. So it's kind of a good sign to see everybody getting in gear for another crop year. So we're all praying that we get some timely rain and that third time's a charm after 2 years of pretty hard conditions.
The Lubbock area is the largest contiguous cotton growing region in the U.S., and though some producers are good on pre-plant moisture, others need more.
There has been some moisture in, since we're headquartered in Lubbock, you know, the Lubbock area has received quite a bit of moisture over the winter, and even in this past month, we've received quite a bit, while other places in our region haven't received hardly any. So in Swisher County, I know when I was talking to Barry, it's still pretty dry over there. It's still pretty dry, obviously, toward the New Mexico line. They can't catch a break. So there's some pockets in our region that have received adequate moisture, some good moisture received maybe in the upper panhandle and, you know, mid-South Plains, but there are still some counties that are dry. And, you know, when you have multiple years of just drought, your subsoil moisture cannot catch up. And so we've still got some people that need to be thought about and prayed for, because it's still pretty dry for several of our membership.
And of course, all this is happening under an extended farm bill. Will we get a new farm bill in 2024?
I think everybody's excited that it's being discussed, and now that there are outlines of the bill from both chambers, we can now go to the negotiating table, you know. We just want to get to the table to negotiate and get a bill done, and so this is a huge step in doing so. And as you said, the House Ag Committee is going to mark up their bill on May 23rd. Cody will be out there for that, so we will have Plains Cotton Growers present in Washington, D.C. when that happens. The Senate has not scheduled their work session yet, but I'm sure that they will announce when they plan to do that soon. Obviously, there are some differences between the two bills, and they're pretty partisan in nature. You know, Chairwoman Stabenow and Chairman Thompson have a little bit different view on how things should be done, but it does give us a point to start from. And they both bills want to achieve a couple of things that would be great for cotton. And then there's a couple of things we'd like to work on. So excited that there's something to look at and something to really work on to get some of this legislation actually in action, considering all of the chaos that has gone on in Congress the past year. This is the most optimistic thing that could happen from my perspective to actually get something done legislatively for farmers.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Let's throw two good things in there. One thing on the corn side, with USDA's a little more optimistic demand estimates posted here today, they gave us a new crop starting point for ending stocks of 2.1 billion bushels. That was smaller than the trade estimate of 2.3. And remember back in February, they're talking 2.5. So we now have a discussion where maybe with the risk on story, we can maybe get a little surprise as far as upside discussion for corn.
Rich Nelson is chief strategist with Allendale.
Wheat side of things, we're also a little surprised, not exactly by their U.S. balance sheet numbers, but by the fact that they now have non-U.S. countries, so all of our competitors, they now have us looking at a net decline in stocks for this discussion. So for corn and wheat, we can find good news. Maybe for the soybeans, USDA is still holding out with some pretty large numbers in the short term here.